Blog Talk Radio.
I know it's time in the morning, kid. I'm gonna let you know right now. We done much. We done much.
Welcome to the Black Panther Corner with General Melly Queen. We are back in the house. This is my first time handling the controls, but we begin in our second season. Tonight we start now with a powerful show, one of very unapologetic and African-centered comrades. I'm talking about one of the ones that stands strong. So we're going to start this second season off. We want to make this a place of coming together as a family, talking, getting the correct information out, learning, growing together, because we already see where we are. We saw this. We've been knowing this. And the ones that still blind, y'all should have saw this the other day. It's time to stop with this foolishness and do what we need to do. This is going to be home for us. And I want us to come together, get this stuff together, start working. So today, we got a very, very, like I said, unapologetic brother. I love to hear this brother talk. He doesn't play any games. He's about the liberation of our people and about putting in their work. Today, we welcome brother Comrade Patrick Lumumba from Senatobia, Mississippi. Peace and power, Comrade.
Thank you. Peace and power, Hotel. Salam Aleikum. Ashe, Black Power, Free Land to everybody out there that's listening to this powerful show. And what I like to say, Millie Queen, is thank you for continuing to bring these type of shows to our people. You know, I am aware of the adversity you have faced, and just the commitment to continue to bring this critical information to our people is very important. And I just wanted you to know that I appreciate you in doing that, keeping to the battlefield and staying 10 toes down with us on this right here. And that's what we want to do today. We want to bring a powerful show to our people. And hopefully we'll give them some very informative information.
Ashe, thank you, Ashe. I greatly appreciate that, because, like I say, you want to comrades, sister comrade Crystal Denise, because, you know, I recently voted in the Republic of New Africa elections and everything, and I did do it. But I was going to join the Black Liberation Movement, but we are all in collaboration anyway. Because
that's
I
right.
Even know we can be coming down there. I'll be down there soon.
That's right.
I'll be down there soon.
All one effort. That's right.
Yeah. I am so glad that we are getting to work together. So we're going to start this show off today. I want you to, like I say, introduce yourself to the people, give us a little bit of your background and, how you got to where you are today. And then we'll go on to, you know, the accomplishments that you are making down there in Mississippi. Because people, they trying to act like Mississippi, you know, that's country. No, baby, Mississippi way, like you say, that's the Delta. They don't even understand what they need. So go ahead and sign off for us.
Well, for those that's listening in, and I'm sure there's not many that's listening in that are not familiar with myself. I make myself a no report. I'm a servant of our people. I'm a servant, and I'm a warrior in the lines of our ancestors and their efforts. What the Black Liberation Movement is what I am the presiding chief organizer facilitator of, is an effort to reclaim the dignity, the respect, and the honor of our people, and to create some functional and practical realizations that we, as a people, have to get to a point where we are able to ascertain. And that is what we call the liberation of our people. So what we basically do as the Black Liberation Movement, we operate on a premise, and that premise is to control our areas of battle. And if any of the people listening that understand, you know, the teachings of our social scientists, Dr. Neely Fuller and Dr. Francis Grace Wilson, they set forth an agenda, and they socially how Black people should be navigating themselves in this day and time after being subjugated to racism, white supremacy for the last 400 to 500 years in this country. So we look to gain power, and that's critically important. I think when I was looking at the write-up for the show, I saw that you had a list of criteria that we're going to draw from, and we want to talk about Black power, and I think that's one of the first things we're going to talk about. But in building the Black Liberation Movement and what it is that we're doing and trying to get our people to understand is that we must gain power in all these areas of battle, you know, that Neely Fuller and Dr. Francis Chris Wilson laid down. And that is the premise agenda of the Black Liberation Movement, is to gain power in our educational areas, to gain power in our political areas, our economic areas, our law areas, our labor areas, and all the other areas of those nine areas about that we'll get into. That is the premise of what it is that we do, and we want to practically applicate, not just theorize. We want to practically apply these in these areas so that we can actually have that power and show that power in a tangible way. You there, Sister Millie? Peace and power.
I'm sorry. Hello.
I don't know what happened.
I had pushed mute and was talking. I said, I apologize. Hey, we gonna keep it going. This is how it happens, and this is how it's gonna keep rolling. I didn't know what was going on. But like I said, yes, I want you to go right on into the definition of true Black power, because we have had Lieutenant Jahi and Ahmad up here before. And when they explain what true Black power is, our family doesn't know what Black power means. They think just putting up your fist is Black power. That's not what it entails. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I try and make things as simple and clear as possible. We don't need long, drawn-out theorized definitions of certain of the thing. We have to be able to be clear. One of our greatest teachers, Dr. Isaac Richmond, had taught me. He said, be clear, you know, and that's the thing that our people need most. So I don't try to highly articulate things. I try to be clear about them. So I jotted it down right before we got started. The definition that I want to draw from in this conversation for Black power, because I have used many, but the simple definition that I want to draw from Black power is simply this. Black power is Black people's ability to determine the outcome. I'm going to say it again for the people listening and for yourself. Black power is simply the ability of Black people to determine the outcome. And when you look at that, you can see where we have been dissident. You have not been able to practically apply what we call black power. And when you look at those areas of battle that we name and that we draw from Dr. Stephen Fuller and Francis Chris Wilson, you will see that we don't determine the outcome in any of those areas. So that's what the agenda of the Black Liberation Movement is. It's to build black power in every area of battle in our lives.
Okay. Exactly. You said black power is the ability of black people to determine our outcome. And
that's right.
And that's one of the things that infuriates me when I look at things, because just like you saw what happened, like I said, with the breach on the Capitol and how these people, I'm going to call them, like a fool, but they'll shoot our children in the back. Now, some people going to say, you know, we shouldn't talk on that. Oh, yes, we're going to speak. We're going to speak on that. Because, see, that's y'all's problem. That's their What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked. Most black people are cowards about talking about it, having this type of conversation anyway. You know, so that's the type of response that you get from cowards when it comes to talking about these type of dynamics. What we saw yesterday, day before yesterday, whatever day it was an insurrection within the culture of white supremacy. And what we're looking at, if we're looking at a dichotomy that exists within white supremacy, where Donald Trump has basically incinerated, he has ignited a fire that burns in the belly of every white person. And that fire is the yearning to have power and dominion and control. That's what white supremacy is. So when we seen that insurrection taking place yesterday, that upheaval on Capitol Hill that was taking place, what you saw was the anger and the frustration of white people who had been reignited by an overt racist by the name of Donald Trump, and they seen him going out of power, and he has incinerated them to make them feel like they losing something. The last thing white people want to do is lose power. So when they see Donald Trump going out, and this new white regime coming in, more than seemingly, put quotation marks around seemingly, that seemingly more tolerable, more non-racist, more humanitarian type regime coming in, these white people that you see storming the Capitol, they see that as an act of war. So they show America what white power is all about. And if people would understand, and that's why I made the post, I said black people really need to look at this and observe it and learn from it. What is there for black people to learn? You know, outside of, yeah, we all know if there had been black people, that we would have been shot down, every police officer that was on duty that day would have been at Capitol Hill armed, ready to fight. Every every SWAT team would have been there, armed to the teeth. Tear gas, and all would have been there. But that's not the only thing that we should be talking about. We should be talking about actually what's taking place and what it is that we need to be doing. You know, I heard many people talking about, you know, if that had been us, we would have been shot down. Of course you would have been shot down. But what you going to do about that? You know, you going to ask these people to keep showing them, well, look, if it had been us, we would have been shot down and let us not, you know, could y'all not shoot us down? Could you, we asking that you not be like that, you know? And what we basically asking white people to do is to have a moral character or moral conviction about the lives of black people. That's why we walk around here and say Black Lives Matter. You know, all those docile, impotent, dehumanized, begging gestures that we have. All of that is a plea to white people to treat us in a certain way. But what I'm trying to say and what the Black Liberation Movement stands for is how are we going to treat ourselves? Because white people have made a determination on how they want to treat us. And that's permanent and that's fact. And some of us live in a delusion as though it's going to change tomorrow.
Exactly. We have a caller that called in at area code 615. I'm going to see who this is right quick and let them join the conversation, okay? Come in. Hold on just a sec. Okay, area code 615. Who are we speaking with?
Peace and blessings, Queen. This is Brother Maurice Muhammad. I was just calling in to listen and add support to our dear Brother Patrick.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
so very
yes,
much.
Sir.
So very much. If you want to
yes,
add
sir.
A comment or something, you can speak to the people because we are here to show love to each other, share knowledge, wisdom, even stories, your life, anything. Anything can help.
Well, most definitely. Thank you, Queen. Right now, I really don't have nothing to say. I'm listening to the commander and learning as he goes by. But if I have something to chime in with, I definitely will. But
okay.
Listening to the commander right now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. And we sure appreciate you. I'm just going to put you back on mute, okay?
Okay.
All right. All right, commander. I greatly appreciate you getting a call. No, I'm tripping.
Yeah,
we're going to have some more callers.
Because when you're out here and you're doing this work, Sister Millie, you create relationships with genuine and real people who are adamant about the liberation of our people. And that brother that just called in, that's my brother. I mean, that's my brother. And when I say my brother, I'm not saying that as a figure of speech. I'm saying that as a matter of fact. So that brother is going to be by my side, and I'm going to be by his side. And we're going to see this thing through. So when you're doing this work and you're consistent about doing this work, you're going to come about brothers like Maurice Muhammad, you know, who is adamant about the liberation of our people. So that's why that brother is on the phone, because we are attached at the hip, and we're going to see this thing through together.
I say. And we have another one caller, area code 912. So I'm going to hold on. I'm going to get a question in right quick before we add them to the line. Because I love reading your posts. Like I told you, I've been blocked for some umpteen days because of my message.
Right.
That I keep on deck, always unapologetic. But I saw this post and you were asking this set of questions. Have we had enough?
Mm-hmm.
Have you not been shown enough? After this takeover, where do we stand as a collective?
Right.
Neither side of this racist country cares anything about us. Now, are they going to pick a sign or what? I read that post and it had me thinking. And don't you know some of them still haven't seen it yet?
Right.
Go ahead and talk about the post.
Right. Yeah. What I was alluding to in that particular post, because things were transpiring so fast, and I was just laying there in the bed and watching as they were transpiring on CNN, and my mind immediately go to the collective of our people and how the collective of our people will absorb and observe what was taking place, seeing a dichotomy that existed in white people. And black people I don't like talking about black people in the third person, so I'm going to say we, not black people, because I'm one. And we have come to a point in our development and being immersed into the culture of white supremacy that we are like different than children. I tell Sister Quilts all the time, I said we come to a place where we aspire to be little white people instead of grown black people. So we look, and I'm trying to see, do the collective of black, of my people, see what's taking place here. You got a war between, and if we sit back and we look at this war that's taking place between white people, what are we seeing as a collective? And most of us are looking at them, and we subconsciously or consciously have to figure, like, which one of these sides are for us. And the logical thing is neither side is for you. Neither side is for us. But the collective of our people, I want them to, I wanted them fun back to me, which we never get response on social media, you know, to these type of conversations. But I wanted somebody to respond back to me. What do you see taking place here? Where does any help from black for black people exist in this of what we see in today? Why are these people warring with each other in this moment? And how does that apply to black people? Or do it even apply to black people? So I wanted us to see in that moment the rawness of what was taking place. And like I was telling people, and like I'm telling us today, I saw a white supremacist run roughshod over Capitol Hill. And when I say the pureness and the essence of what white supremacy is, I mean just that. I mean, that's how America was conceived. That type of action that we saw on Capitol Hill the other day, that's how America was conceived. And I'm going to quote this that I wrote down for people to hear and understand this, because we don't have historical recollection. We don't deal when we get up in the morning from historical recollection. We get up every morning with a clean slate for white people to inundate us with whatever they choose to. But if we understood history, we would be better assessors of what's going on in our world. So I wrote this down because I seen the pureness of what America was when I was observing that insurrection, that upheaval on Capitol Hill. That's what I saw. I saw the pureness of what America really is and how it was conceived. And this is what I like to share with the listeners. America was birthed in genocide. It was built on slavery. And it is sworn and committed to maintaining white supremacy. When somebody show you who they are, you need to believe them. I'm going to say it one more time. America was born in genocide. It was built on slavery. And it is committed to upholding white supremacy. I don't care which cracker is leading this country. Committed to upholding white supremacy. So the thing is, too many black people have gotten comfortable in a white supremacist system. So people ask me all the time. And people say, well, we got to infiltrate the system and change it. No, that's the wrong approach. And I'm not going to say that's my opinion. I'm going to tell you straight out, that's the wrong approach. You can't infiltrate a system that's designed to keep you at the bottom of it and expect to change it. You are a permanent underclass in a white supremacist system. You are a permanent underclass. That's how white supremacy is designed. That's the DNA of the country. Is to make sure that black people stay in their place.
And
so
this,
infiltrate their system? Yeah, I'm
listening. And that's true to the fact. That's because it infuriates me when I hear people say, well, we can break it from the inside. Okay, how many years have we tried to break it from the inside? Now, you know, when our family first got here, I can understand they thought maybe, hey, they got bamboo. All right. Hey, now we know. A black person gets no respect anywhere on this planet. I haven't had anybody to show me somewhere yet. So then they get angry at me when I say it's black first, regardless. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Can you talk about how the importance of us changing this dynamic more African-centered and getting back to who we are? Because like they see the shift. They see we were never equated in this system at all. And we're not even trying to build our own. What are they thinking of?
Right. Well, to answer that question is nothing more than a continuation of what I was already saying. And what I'm simply saying is that you don't infiltrate this system to try and change it. What you do is you remove yourself from the system and you build your own system. And if black people are at the bottom of this system of America, are a murderer, like what you called it, then if we are at the bottom in the primary foundation of this country, I'm talking about we have economically stimulated this country like no other economy in the annals of human history. I study this, and that's why I know for matter of fact what we have done. And I know my people don't have a historical account of what black African people, how we account for the bottom line of this country. So if you're at the bottom of this type of system, this capitalist system, which requires a bottom rail to sustain the top rail, you remove yourself from the system. And anytime you move the foundation of a system away, what happened to the system anyway? Anytime you remove the bottom of a system like this, what happens is that it falls down. So black people have to stop concentrating on being little white people. We have to start concentrating on being grown black people. We got to remove ourselves from this system that we are inculcated in as a permanent underclass. See, we're not designed to come out of this system or to build ourselves up in this system. Yeah, you see these little Negroes, you know, the Kamala Harris's, you know, and all these inconsequential politicians. And I did say inconsequential. We have had inconsequential politicians all the way up to the highest office in the land. I'm talking about the President of the United States. We have had inconsequential. And what I mean by inconsequential is that they don't determine the outcome. How many executive orders were made? Excuse me, Queen.
I said, and the thing is, the outcome didn't include us anyway. You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly
didn't include
right.
us
so what
anyway.
Did, what did I say? Yeah, what did I say black power was at the beginning of the show? I said black power is black people determining the outcome. These black leaders that are standing before us today, with the exception of a very few, these leaders are inconsequential pawns that have been selected by white supremacists to place in front of us. Because we have taken success and progress, Kamala Harris running for vice president. Well, who determined that? Did black folk vote for that? Or was she placed there? See what I'm saying? So
exactly.
That's what we have to understand. That's what we have to understand. These people are inconsequential. We got to find real leaders. And these fake leaders, they have to be set down. And we have to remove ourselves from this system because there's nowhere in this system that is designed for the black man to raise himself up. We got to build our
Exactly. Because in this system, it constantly feeds on our black men like parasites, and until our black men are put back in their righteous place, it's not going to get that balance back for our people, period. I want to welcome
right.
everybody that has called in. If anybody wants to add a comment or anything, please push one so that I can add you to the call. But we're going to go on with the next question because, like I said, comment, I love the way you talk. I heard you on, what is the show? The Empower Hour with two queens. And you
yeah.
talking about, you know, and you said it's so funny. You like, you know, y'all got y'all little gardens. It's cute. You got your,
mm-hmm.
y'all going
yeah.
over here. That's cute, you know. But
mm-hmm.
can you see
mm-hmm.
thousands and millions of us? I want you to talk about that because that made me think. We are not
mm-hmm.
even equipped to step away from these people like we need to, but we have to. We're going to have to sacrifice.
Right, right. Yeah, we have to make the sacrifice. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about to segue into what it is that you want me to speak on is the economic empowerment. And I'm using the word empowerment because that's what you put in the empowerment. Basically, is when somebody is appropriating you with a measure or a delusion of power. That's not real power. Because when somebody can empower you, meaning give you a measure or a delusion of power, they can also take it away. What we are looking for is to become powerful. We looking for true power. And what true power is when we get that from the inside, when we go within our own capabilities, soul, spirit, and our own manhood, our own womanhood, and we begin to develop from there. See, Kamala Harris can't give black people power. See, it was a position that was given to her. We didn't appoint her. So what I'm basically saying is that true power, we have to begin to do the things that precipitate true power to our people. And one of those things is controlling resources. See, a lot of people don't want to talk about that. But I love talking about it because that's the real shit. That's what we really need to be talking about. Our black men, we have to control a demographic that's ours, and we have to determine that it's ours. What did white people set out to do? When they set out to set the constructs and the construct of white supremacy, what did they set out to do? They set out first to control a land mass. That's what you call America today. So how did they do that? It was already occupied, right?
Exactly. Go ahead.
Okay, it was already occupied. So to push forth a system of white supremacy, what did they have to do? They had to do the same damn thing that they did yesterday or the day before yesterday. They stormed shit. They took shit. And they began to set forth their demographic and carve out their parameters of where they would concentrate their focus and control a landmass. So what black people and black men and black women as well have to start to look at and begin chasing, and I wrote that down too, what that is, because we really need to understand what practical application is. But we have to set forth a demographic like what the Republic of New Africa had done. In 1968, they determined that them five states, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, would be the Republic of New Africa. That's where black people on this side of the world, the Western Hemisphere, would establish a new territory for ourselves. So within establishing those territories, we have to control the resources of those territories. And that's why the Black Liberation Movement has stepped forth in our beginning stages to control a very primary resource, which is food. So when we enter these conversations, because most of the people see us out here trying to control our own food source, and with the black consciousness going up now, you know, black people are being more conscious. So when we talk about growing our own food, you get people in the city, like our sister Hannifer and El Quamar. They was talking about how could people in the city grow food. Well, go and study John Henry Clark. And John Henry Clark would tell you that people don't supposed to live in cities. That's not us. See how white people trapped us in cities? They trapped us in these little places that we call ghettos, stacked us up on top of each other. That ain't how we're supposed to live. That creates frustration, anxiety, and all these different things that we begin to compete with each other in these small spaces, resources. They trap us like that. We're supposed to live in the countryside, on the land. Mm-hmm. The city is just a place where you go to create commerce markets. That's how we live. But now we got black people in the city chasing a dollar, talking about how can I grow my own food? Well, that's cute that you're trying to grow a few squats in your backyard. You understand what I'm saying? It's cute that you want to do urban farming on a city block. But the same government that's incentivizing you to do that, they know that they have systematically taken hundreds of thousands of acres away from black men in Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana. They have to feed a nation. That little shit that you're doing ain't going to feed a nation. So we got to be critical in our thinking, and we got to be smart and wise. And that's what I meant by that. You know, the Black Liberation Movement, we farm a few acres of land. We don't have enough to feed a nation, but our thing is to create a small model example so that we can prick the consciousness of black people to say, send your money to black people who are seeking to feed the black nation. Because we ain't nothing, we ain't nowhere away from white people saying, well, we just ain't going to feed black folks. How about that?
Thank you.
How about
that's
that?
What I tell them. Yeah. I said, your enemy is not going to continue to feed you. Let me say this again, Commander. I want to welcome everybody that's tuning in to the show. If you would like to add a comment or speak, please press 1 so that I can add you to the call. And thank you all for joining us. Because, and like I said, Commander, you are speaking truth. Because what they're not understanding is they took from us. They constantly took from us. So how do we write that, right? They keep saying we need our reparations. And I don't want the money without the land. Give us half of this land. I don't want the money without the resources or you all doing away with the school system because the money is not going to correct anything. So what are your thoughts on that right there?
What particular part of that you speaking on? My thoughts on what in particular?
On the parts of, you know, they saying if they give us reparations, that's going to equate everything and we'll be all right. I don't think so.
Reparations is a farce to me. You know, it's a continued conversation to keep black people entertained with the idea that white people might be considering something moral. You know, white people know what they done to us. Black people, in the way that we going at this, we will never get reparations from white people. I just told you what the DNA of this country is, and everybody listen. So why are we sitting around trying to have the most intelligent argument about reparations, sitting around trying to figure out how to approach this same white man with a different white people know what they owe. They pay the people back who they wanted to pay back. They know black people have suffered more so under their rule than anybody else. But what else do white people know? White people also know that I'm not going to empower this black man. See, why would he? If you were white and empowered, do you know how you got there? So why would you empower the very mechanism to use as a tool to keep yourself sustained in that way? Why would you do that? So that's why I say, you know, why are we looking for leaders to be ambassadors to white people for us as opposed to looking for leaders who understand the inherent nature of white people and want to lead our people in a different way? And that's why we get so much friction. That's why we get banned from social media. Because one day, just like the book that I'm writing, we have become a domesticated people. Like Dr. Richmond had taught me, we are domesticated people. But out of that oppression, change must come. Out of the prayers and the meditations of black women, it's got to be. So where does that change come from? It comes from the womb of black women. And when we get to a point where we understand the dynamics of how our change comes, we will look to our children and we will create an uncompromised generation of children who will not sell us out. And that generation of children will come from the womb of black women who ready to give for birth to real black men, not these diffident cowards that we raising right now. See, the Black Liberation Movement and the BYLC is not composed of cowards. Brother Maurice Muhammad will attest to this. We don't raise cowards. We raising these brothers, and the first gun that they going to tote will be the gun inside their skull. The first gun that we gonna sharpen up.
You understand?
So we raise the black men not to run from their obligated duty, but to stand firm and do what they have to do to make sure that we have a part of this world that we can call our own. Because at one time the whole world was out.
I love that. I'm telling you, that is powerful. That's power speaking, because that domestication comes in cowardness. You know, that's what's wrong with our family. We have to stop being so cowardice. Domestication becomes that materialism, that self-hate. How can we work on that, because just like you said, the womb of the mother, you got to work on healing up.
Mm-hmm.
With self-love, right, and different things. So speak on that for us.
Well, like I said, the healing process began with teaching, and we don't have the institutions to effectively teach what it is that we need to be taught on a consistent basis. That's why we, right now, the Black Liberation Movement will be starting this month. We will have our first Saturday schools at the Ashe Academy. And that's what we have formed. We have a group of educators that I think are very qualified to begin this practical process of institutionalizing the teaching. And we talk all the time that, you know, these lectures and YouTubes and these things of this nature, these things are not enough to catalyze what it is that we need to be practically applicated in our daily life. We have to institutionalize the teaching, just like what white folks have done. White folks institutionalize white supremacy. You don't go to an institution where white supremacy is not the primary curriculum. Your schools you go to, white supremacy is the primary curriculum. Your churches you go to, white supremacy is the primary curriculum. Even if we're Brother Lumumba, we got black churches. You don't have black churches. You don't have black churches. You have white churches that black folk go to every Sunday. That's what you have. So your schools are white supremacist institutions. Your churches are white supremacist institutions. Your jobs are white supremacist institutions. And what I mean by that, they have institutionalized the idea of white supremacy. So every day we wake up, we internalize and ingest white supremacy. We don't see black people controlling things. So what we're trying to do with the Ashe Academy and the Black Liberation Movement is to create a consistent education that we can get our children consistently taught the basis of what black power is and how the true history, not the lie, the true history. And even in us doing this, we're not resourced enough right now to have this on a daily basis, because these educators, they have jobs. And when are we going to get to a point where we can employ these educators, where they don't have to have jobs in white supremacist systems while we go and do a Saturday school once a month? When are we going to be able to do that? Because that's what makes me upset, Sister Millie. That's what makes me upset, that we can't give a damn dollar to a primarily black institution, you know, but we give all these dollars, these trillions of dollars, to these white brands and all these different things, and we basically finance our own oppression, but we can't constantly give to the empowerment of our own people.
Exactly. It's sickening, because I look at it, I said they're just like they say, labor whores. The guy that owns,
right,
Louis Vuitton, he makes $130 billion a year and probably doesn't even deal with black people. But
right,
our black money takes care of our enemies. Like they said, black ignorance,
right,
is profitable.
That's right.
This has been I love having you all here. You know I'm going to have you, Denise, Brother Jaheed, Brother Mont. Oh, congratulations, baby. Is the baby here yet?
Well, he's not here yet, but he's coming. So
right,
we are waiting.
Congratulations on that.
Right.
This has been a great show. We are about to run out of time. I want to thank you, thank you, thank you. I want you to give us a closing. Thank you, everybody, that tuned in today. This has been a great show. Like I said, this is going to be a space for us to come together, solution-based, community-based, family-based. This is ours. We need
right.
each other. Give us a closing, comrade. I appreciate you. Like I said, we're getting it together, and thank you for coming, and go ahead.
Well, I love you and appreciate you too, Queen. And I want you to continue with what it is that you're doing. Bring effective people on your platform that can speak life into our people and to inspire our people to go out there and practically applicate what it is that we need, just like them white people went up and they showed the world who was in power on that day. What we need to do is the same thing. You know, we need to practically applicate, take it from a theory. See, black liberation is just a theory in our mind right now. We need to take it from a theory, a theorized state, to a tangible reality. So to do that, we have to create a critical mass. It's not going to take all of us. It's going to take a critical mass of us. And a critical mass is the smallest amount necessary to create the change that we need and to make it perpetual. And the other of us will catch on. Our children are not diffident. Our children are not cowards like we are. We have been made cowards to white supremacy. But we have to raise a generation that's uncompromised. And that's my message in closing the day. Let's bring forth a generation of uncompromised geniuses that are not just intelligent, that are not just knowledgeable, but they have to be courageous to go forward and do what it is that needs to be done. And with that, I yield.
Ashe. Free the land. I appreciate everybody that tuned in tonight. Like I said, this is our conversation with one of our dynamic, unapologetic brothers, warriors out there. Brother, comrade, Patrick Lumumba of Sanatobia. Thank you, comrade. We love you all. See you all next week on the Black Panther Corner. All right.
Black power. Black power.